Welcome to Home and Family Finance with Paul Barry. It's your family, it's your finances, and it's your future. Home and Family Finance is sponsored by the Defense Credit Union Council, serving those who serve our country, and by CUNA, the Credit Union National Association. Now, here's the host of Home and Family Finance, Paul Barry.
And wherever you may be today, we hope it's nice and warm. Not so warm here in the nation's capital where we're broadcasting to you. A little chilly, but we are told that things are going to get better. But what we do have is a show with some very hot topics. We're talking, you know, if you're a regular listener, how often we talk about millennials and Generation X and what's happening in terms of the most important part of everything they do as it relates to jobs and to making a living and being successful. Financial literacy. And that's what drives our program. We're all about financial literacy and what we should know and how we can do better and why we should do better. You know, everything evolves around the money that you take home, your paycheck or your savings, whatever it is that relates to the dollars that you have and how to keep them and how to make them work for you. One of the surprising topics and issues comes out of a couple of studies. You recall a couple of weeks ago we had Anna Maria Lasardi from the George Washington Global Financial Literacy Excellence Center talking about where we stand on worldwide in the United States in terms of financial literacy. And we ended up in about the 14th or 15th place. Not good enough, I submit to you, for the number one country in the world. Not good enough. We ought to be number one. Our kids ought to know more. We ought to have the most efficient system going, understood by the people that use it. But that's not the case. And then another study comes out that was released this month, and it's about millennials. And it's a study that was done by PricewaterhouseCoopers and the GW Global Financial Literacy Excellence Center. They were analyzing more than 5,500 millennials. And those are people that are born between in the 80s and 90s, and their attitudes and capabilities around financial literacy. And folks, I got to tell you, the results are not attractive. It's surprising. The takeaway is this, that millennials are still struggling to grasp basic financial concepts and is having an impact on their overarching financial well-being. Do you hear what I'm saying? They're not prepared. They're not ready. Listen to these numbers. 24% of this group demonstrated basic financial knowledge. Only 24%, not even a quarter, demonstrate basic financial knowledge. 81% have at least one source of long-term debt, and most of us know what that is. 48% felt they couldn't come up with $2,000 in the next month if they had to. 48%, almost half. And 67% make only the minimum payment or late payments on their credit cards every month. It is surprising numbers, scary numbers, I think. But what is the person that's responsible in part for this and who's trying to do something about it? What does she think? Shannon Schuyler, no surprise, a principal at PricewaterhouseCoopers. She's keenly involved with the U.S. Corporate Responsibility Leader. That company has put their money where their mouth is, over $190 million. Directed toward making a positive difference in the financial literacy of our young people. Shannon, it's a pleasure to have you on the program today.
It's always wonderful to be with you, Paul.
I wanted to set the stage for you and then kind of let you tell us, first of all, your reaction to the study. Secondly, can we fix it? What do we need to do? Just let's go through these things and see how you felt. Were you surprised with the numbers?
I was surprised. I mean, I think this is a generation that went through the most recent downturn. And so when everything happened in 2008, 2009, 2010, saw their families losing their pensions, losing homes, had friends that were losing savings, you would have thought that they would have embraced that, similar to many of the baby boomers, and said, gosh, we have to be extra careful, and we have to really make sure that we're reading and we're saving. And really what we found is that's not happening. They really don't understand, as you had said, basic financial concepts, and only about 8% understand things that are more sophisticated around inflation or even risk diversification. So this is really what we see right now is the lowest level of financial literacy remains with the millennials, and that's even after really seeing the things that they've gone through with the economy and 17 states mandating financial literacy before they graduate for high school.
So the obvious answer is the fix. so that we stop this, so that the next generation, the next these young people that are now going through the process of, quote, education, get a fair share of financial literacy as well. What do we do here, Shannon, from your perspective?
A couple things that are at play. One, I think this generation is really an experiential generation, and they live for the now. They're not necessarily concerned with where their future is, which is why only 36% of them are actually accessing their retirement accounts within the organizations that they work for, and 20% are taking money out already from those. And so they're really using their money in those accounts more like a savings account versus something that lasts for the future. And I think it's having that conversation that they might not realize when they graduated from college, their debt most likely is far more significant than they really realized. And you compile that debt on top of credit cards, one or two that they had in college, and then have them starting out with a job and having to figure out rent and having to figure out transportation. Mm-hmm. I think what they're realizing is that together they were never prepared for what that is, as well as they really want a lifestyle that was similar to their parents. So all in all, it really is setting them up for failure.
Now, we're talking about millennials, folks, and that's the generation of Americans born between the early 1980s and the mid-1990s. While they are exceptional and they are wonderful in many ways, this is what Anna Maria Lusardi over at GW said. Millennials owe a lot. They know too little. They struggle with debt. Their struggle with debt may eventually become our problem, too. That's a scary thought, Shannon, and I mean, we have to find a fix.
No, we do, and I think it was really troubling in the survey to find out that they don't ask questions. And so all of this is happening, and yet they don't want to go to anyone. So they're not going to people who are formal trainers around financial literacy. They tend to go to their parents if they're going to go. And the other thing they really want is they would feel more confident if they were actually talking to a peer or a financial advisor that is of their age and understands why they want to have these experiences, and that's why they're spending their money. And unfortunately, there's not enough within the system that is of that age group to really allow colleagues to talk to colleagues. And so they're left by themselves, really having these conversations and being embarrassed by where they are.
We're talking with Shannon Schuyler, who is president at PricewaterhouseCoopers. And when we come back, I'm going to tell you what they're doing and what they hope to accomplish from this and what others can do. Look, we've got to do something. We call them millennials. We call them generation. We're talking about our children. We're talking about our future. We've got to do what's right. When we come back, we'll talk more with Shannon to find out what she thinks that is. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm Paul Berry.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
My guest is Shannon Schuyler, Principal U.S. Corporation Responsibility Leader. PricewaterhouseCoopers, president of charitable foundations, et cetera. Now, she's never going to toot her horn the way it should be, so I'm going to do that real quickly, and then we'll talk about how others can jump in and make a difference. In 2012, PwC launched what they called Earn Your Future, EYF, a five-year, $160 million commitment focused on helping students develop critical financial skills and providing educators with the resources and training to teach those skills in schools. In April of last year, PwC U.S. extended EYE by an additional $30 million, increasing it to now one of the largest and broadest corporate commitments to financial literacy. So she has a right to talk about it. And then the study. She and those who join her know that you have to know about a problem to fix it. And so I'm going to say what she won't say. Every corporation in this country ought to be doing something similar. I'm not asking for $190 million. But what are you doing to make sure that our young people are properly educated? And how do we fix the problems? Shannon, it would be helpful if we had more corporate involvement, don't you think?
Oh, I think so. I mean, I think corporations really have to understand the crushing debt that these students are becoming first year, second year within their corporations and figure out how to help. We recently launched a student loan pay down program that just is part of benefits, that if you come to work for PwC, we'll take care of up to $10,000 of your debt.
Wow.
Because the average debt is $35,000, and that's so much, and it's hard to start And if we can take care of that and start paying that off over their first several years with the firm, it gives people a chance. And so I think between adding types of things like that to benefits and also adding employee programs around training for financial literacy, allowing open doors to have this conversation to let people know that they're not by themselves, but they have resources that can really help them. And really, companies can do all of those things right inside their doors.
And Shannon, my concern here, when we let kids graduate from college with tremendous debt, paying for college, they come out, don't you tend to shy away from anything financial because you can't pay it, you don't have the money, you're looking for a job. I guess what I'm asking, does debt itself become one of the instruments that keeps our young people from learning how to be good financial literate people?
I think it starts a downward spiral, and so it shouldn't be surprising that 30% of this group also has overdrawn checking accounts. They have one or two credit cards, and as you said earlier, they only pay minimum, and many of those credit cards are also delayed in the paying for them. And now we're seeing a rise in alternative financial services, and so things like payday loans and pawn shops are being used more and more by this generation because they're so in debt and they're looking for money now to continue with the experiences and the things that they want to do. And so they're really exploring things that once or twice are certainly not bad options, but using those continuously really can get very costly and them in a worse place than they are right now.
And when you look at the overall statistic, I mean, they're unhappy with where they are, these young people. They want to do better. They want to feel better. And I think knowing that other people are in here besides mom and dad to help them out, that's what I applaud PwC for doing what they did, for saying to somebody, come to work for us. We're not only going to pay your paycheck, but we're also going to help you pay down your debt. I mean, that's the kind of spirit I think they have to see in order to believe, okay, I can get out of this. I can handle this.
No, this is, like you said, an amazing generation, but they're so financially fragile. But they really can leverage their technology savvy. There's so many things available, not only within their companies, but on the Internet, that allow them to learn at their pace, learn in ways and with courses that really resonate with them. And we need to help them see all the variety of things out there that they can reach out to and find the ones that really are most applicable.
Shannon, let me stop you just a minute. Let's get back to that. Let me take a break. I've got to stop in here for just a minute, but we'll be right back with Shannon Schuyler and more about what we should be doing about millennials in our country. You're listening to Radio America. I'm your host, Paul Beer, and we thank you for joining us. Our program sponsor is the Defense Credit Union Council, and we thank them for their continued support of this program dedicated to making all of us smarter consumers. And if there's a topic that you want to discuss or you want us to discuss, please write to me here, Paul Berry, Radio America, 1100 North Glebe Road, Suite 900, Arlington, Virginia, 22201, or you may contact me, my website at hffradio.com, hffradio.com. Okay, we're talking about a study that was commissioned, if you will, by PricewaterhouseCoopers, and we have one of their top executives, a president of their responsibility, their charitable foundations, and part of their principal with their corporate responsibility leader. PricewaterhouseCoopers is setting the standard, folks, for how corporations can be involved. And as I said before, they don't toot their own horn, but they just do what has to be done. They're paying out big sums of dollars, sharing some of that profit, saying, okay, it has to go here to make a difference because we are a company of people. And without educated, qualified people, we can't do what we need to do. It's a simple give and take. Here's what we give to you. We get back and we take this from you. That works, and it's working for PricewaterhouseCoopers, isn't it, Shannon?
No, it absolutely is. And I think the one thing that we've really learned is this is about all types of millennials. There was a thought that once a millennial or individuals went to college, they actually had a grasp on this. And what we're finding is even though 85% of college-educated millennials are responding that they really understand financial concepts, only 14% of them answered all the questions right. And so it doesn't matter whether you've gone to college or not. These are things that you're not taught in school, and many people are not taught it at home. And so it takes more than a college education to just know what to do. And certainly employers should be there to help and to understand the dilemmas that these millennials are in.
First of all, thank you for getting the study out there. Now that you have the study out there and everybody can look at it and read it and see what it says and understand it, what should happen now?
One, we certainly hope that more states and more schools move to financial literacy training throughout school. So this isn't about having one course your junior year and then you graduate. This is about embedding it from kindergarten through high school, because you only understand financial concepts when you actually put them into practice. So you're not going to know how to really leverage the stock market when it's time to use it when you're in the third or fourth grade. And so it's, we got to make sure that people are learning things actually as the things are actually happening in their lives. And so hopefully more schools will adopt this. Hopefully more companies will really see the role that they play for these individuals coming to work for them. And certainly families will start to talk about this and realize that it can't be a taboo topic anymore.
No, it can't be. We've got to admit that we don't know what we don't know. And I love, one of the things that I know PricewaterhouseCoopers is doing is training the trainers. You're actually making a difference with the teachers, saying, look, we'll help you become more qualified to teach financial literacy.
No, absolutely. I think one of the things is you throw this at teachers, and many of them don't understand the concepts necessarily, and we want to make sure we're helping them be more financially savvy, as well as teaching them things so they can readily pass it on. And so working very closely with the Knowledge at Wharton High School and others to bring teachers together by the thousands to educate them so they feel like they own this and they feel empowered to teach it.
Is it fixable?
I think that this is one of those things that is fixable. It's just about continuous training and making sure that people can access information when they can. And then it's also about trust. I think the financial systems over many years and even decades have lost some trust, and we have to find a way to really restore that and to guide people back to the financial systems that are really very positive and to allow them to trust that system.
I think the other thing that is really, I won't say scary, but as of concern, is where we as the number one country in the world end up when it comes to financial literacy. 14th on the list is not high enough, is it, Janet?
No, it's absolutely not. I mean, you look at the power that we have as a country, and you look at what our people do and the entrepreneurs that we have and the innovations that are coming out, and those things are amazing and truly leading the world. But if we can't get our act together around finances, around personally how do we manage and how are we accountable for what we sign and our dollars, it really has a whole ripple effect to the downfall of the economy.
The other part of that, of course, is that we can't just look across the street anymore and figure that's who we're competing against. You know very well at PricewaterhouseCoopers, we're not competing with folks across the street, are we?
No. But it's been very interesting. Even the work that we've done and certainly started in the U.S., we've now translated our materials into four different languages. We're working with folks everywhere from Russia to Japan to Mexico and Brazil and Canada. And so this is an issue that people are really embracing and saying it breaks down walls because everybody understands how you can get yourself in this situation, and everyone is looking for really help to get out.
If people want more information on the study, where do they go, Shannon?
PwC.com/EYF.
Okay, folks, that's it, and I hope you do want more information. Shannon, we're glad you're there. We're glad that PwC is doing what it's doing. Continue to do that, and please come back and see us again, would you?
Absolutely.
Our delight to have you on the show. Shannon Schuyler, PricewaterhouseCoopers. Folks, they're making a difference. Studies are out there. Information is out there. We've shared it with you. What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? When we come back, we'll tell you something else that you should know about millennials. Stay with us. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm Paul Berry.
Helping you be safe, smart, and secure with your finances. Welcome back to Home and Family Finance with your host, Paul Berry.
And I hope you enjoyed that first segment. Shannon is always very revealing, very concerned about the millennials and what's happening to them and what needs to happen. And you know, the thing I like about PricewaterhouseCoopers is that they put their money where their mouth is. $190 million is going to the programs that they are endorsing as it comes to young people. Someone else who puts a lot of effort in and is concerned about our young people is my next guest. Robert J. La Bombard is CEO of Grad Staff, Inc., and he's going to tell us what that is about. But let me kind of capsulize it and say he's taken a look at all the things that our young people, our newest grads, are facing. And he's got a list of things that he thinks we should be concerned about, you should be concerned about, in terms of understanding how to manipulate the new rules, the new technology, what happens with careers, with counselors, all of that kind of thing at this point that I think will make it much easier for our millennials and young people to make the next step. Bob, welcome to Home and Family Finance. Nice to have you on the show.
Oh, Oh, thanks. Thank you so much, Paul.
I refrain from reading over the accomplishments, but let me just say, so my listening audience knows who's talking, you have over 35 years of business experience in the chemical, environmental, professional services, and staffing industries. 22 years of staffing industry experience as CEO of GradStaff, Inc., and founder and CEO of EnviroStaff. So lots of stuff here, folks. But, Bob, first, explain to us what GradStaff is, how it works, and why you started this.
Sure, yeah. GradStaff is a really unique company. We're a career matchmaker, and so we serve two groups, basically, the new grad coming out of college and then the hiring company. For the hiring company, we do the college recruiting that they don't want to do on their own, and for the new grad, we help them figure out where they fit in the workforce, and then we bring the two together by placing new grads in positions with our client companies that respond to their stated career desires, yeah, and so forth.
Well, talk to me now about where we are. Is this the worst you've ever seen it? Is it as good as you've ever seen it? Is there concern? Where should they put themselves in terms of understanding what they're facing in terms of being hired?
Well, the good news is that 2016 will be probably the best market for new grads in quite some time. You know, the worst year was 2009, at the depths of the recession, and progressively it's gotten better, pretty much every year. But having said that, though, while the market is better, the market has also changed a lot over the years. And so a lot of the coaching we do with candidates is to help them understand those dynamics. But the reason why the market is better is that there's two things really in the favor of the new grad. One is that, there are a lot of baby boomers like myself retiring. There are a lot of industries that tend to have a higher age profile or an older age profile. They need to hire more at the entry level to respond to the loss of a big part of their workforce. And on top of that, with technology continuing to dominate our economy and find new applications all the time, there's a strong need for technology skills, and this millennial group has some very fine skills there, and that puts them at the top of the list, sure, for many employers in terms of who they want to hire.
And if I understand you correctly, you're saying because of the retiring baby boomers, quote unquote, and those in that age group, companies are now more willing to hire entry level people, new people, people that are just coming in the door.
Absolutely. And the key statistic there is that Generation X, those people that are 33 basically to about 50, that's a very small generation, and about 22% of the workforce. There's intense competition for people in that age group. However, there's not enough of them to replace the boomers. Hence, companies will need to hire more at the entry level to find the skills they need to replace the boomers that are retiring.
And I'm also interested in what you say. Technology will continue to revolutionize college recruiting. Explain that.
Yes, I think the one thing that we've seen, especially in the last couple of years in particular, is that companies, even the big companies that do a lot of college recruiting, they're not going on campus as much as they used to. With technology and social media in particular, they can be very targeted in who they go after on the college campus. And a lot of the interviewing these days is done by video interviewing, by Skype and so forth. And so as a result of that, the people with high GPAs, mm-hmm, or the STEM majors, those people in high demand are getting jobs on the college campus. But many students are, because a lot of times they don't know where they fit in the workforce, are not getting those opportunities. And so what's really concerning, even though the market is better, is that still over 70% of college grads are leaving campus without a job, even though the market has gotten better.
Wow, 70%. Now, the low labor force participation rate, you say, will help new college grads. How is that?
Well, that's just because a big part of why the labor force participation rate is so low is because a lot of baby boomers are retiring.
Okay, okay.
It's not the only explanation, but it is a big part of that decline.
All right. Now, the other interesting thing was that you are suggesting that college administrators and college career services are under the gun. How so?
Well, With college as expensive as it is, as your audience well knows, parents and students are demanding more out of that investment in terms of making sure that the student, number one, is career ready after the 4 years, but also hopefully has connections to where the jobs are. And I think schools, do a decent job of making students, or colleges do a decent job of making students career ready.
Mm-hmm.
However, I think colleges are very weak at making real connections to employers in the marketplace.
And I think you're right. Isn't that a slippery slope? I mean, the kid spends 4 years at your college, gets out without a job. You can't turn to the college and say you didn't get them. Well, you can do that, but that's a hard thing to prove, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, but I think that what we see right now is that only about 20% of college students are actively using career services. So that begs the question, well, why are so few actually engaging career services? And what we've seen, again, over the past couple of years is that most college students now are finding that they can get more information and tools on social media and online through online resources than what perhaps what they're getting with the career services department.
We're talking to millennials. If you are one or you have one hanging around the house because they don't have a job, you ought to be listening very closely to what Bob is saying. We're giving it to you for free. All you have to do is just pay attention. We'll be back with more with Bob Lombard as we talk about grad staff and ways to help your kid find the job. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm Paul Berry.
You to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about, or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
And my guest is Bob Lombard. He's talking about the top five job market trends if you're a new college grad or you have one living in the house. And he's CEO of what's a company called Grad Staff, Inc., a national entry-level career matchmaker, new college grads and hiring companies. Bob's unique perspective of what can be expected in 2016. You got to know what you're facing if you're going to try to accomplish something, if you're going to move forward. And that's why we're bringing this to you. Bob, of all the things we're talking about, I want to go some other areas. But if I were to say to you, what's the most important, either a millennial, a new college grad, or the parents of same, what's the most important thing you're going to tell them today that will make a difference, you think, in terms of success?
For a new grad coming out of college and looking for that first job, I think the most important thing there is for them to define their value proposition and what they bring to employers. And a lot of people think that focused on your major, and we at GradStaff really don't care what somebody majors in. It certainly is a factor, but it's more about the overall, again, value proposition that the student brings forward. As an example, what we recommend for our students is for them to do a lot of self-analysis to figure out what transferable skills they bring to employers. And transferable skills are things like critical thinking, time management, leadership, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And as students think about all the experiences they've had during school and part-time jobs, extracurricular activities, those things oftentimes will jump out at them. So that's step number one.
You know, this is so important. Let's just dwell on that for a moment. Look, college grads, millennials, parents, the fact that Judy or Johnny has made it through 4 years of college is in and of itself a very compelling selling point for you or your child. People downplay this, and you just heard what Bob say. It's not just what you majored in. That's great. You're an English major or you're whatever. But what's important is the message you give by saying, I've completed this. This is something that was tough, and I did it. That means something to a prospective employer, doesn't it, Bob?
Oh, absolutely. And I think one thing that we see a lot in the press here, especially over the last 2-3 years, is that there's a lot of pressure for students to pursue a STEM major, science, technology, engineering, or math. And while those, don't get me wrong, those are great majors, our statistics show that even people that major in those things, only 50% of them actually pursue a career in one of those fields.
Mm-hmm.
And so you know, the key point there is that you want to major in something that you really are passionate about, because the purpose of college is, number one, to become a good citizen and to be knowledgeable and to be a participating citizen. And job is also important, but it's not the only thing you go to college for.
That's right. Look, grow up in college and be somebody. And I love that part where you say, tell a story. You know, talk about who you are and what you are and why somebody should want you there. I mean, you have to sell yourself. It's not just relying on a piece of paper that somebody handed you from some school. You've got to tell a story, right?
Right, exactly. And I think what employers want are well-rounded people. And so, you know, if for those going into college or now in college, what you want to focus on is trying to get as much out of the college experience as you possibly can in terms of extracurricular activities like sports and music and so forth, also volunteering, part-time jobs. I mean, all those things you should be doing, because it's through those experiences where you really hone those transferable skills.
You know, Bob, a personal notation here, because we get to personal networking in importance. My son graduated from college in May and had a job, but it didn't work because he couldn't get a visa to London. So he's now job searching. And even as we're speaking, he's up in Philadelphia making connect with a potential job. But last night, before he left, he's working as a waiter at a local restaurant. And these people come and they come and they go. And so they came in last night, and discussion went on. And he knows that the person is a very wealthy person, very well connected. And he refused to talk to the person because he didn't want to seem like he was taking advantage. But in the process of conversation, the wife said, you know, Paul, you should have a job, and my husband can help you, and he's well connected. So Paul came home zippy and very excited, Bob. But if that person hadn't said something to him, he wouldn't have said anything. And the point here is, you've got to reach out and you've got to network with people. You've got to tell people what you're doing.
Oh, absolutely, and I think. Yeah, I think with this demographic, I think they're very good with online networking through social media and so forth, and LinkedIn, which is a fantastic tool. But I think this demographic vastly underestimates the importance of personal networks, and they have a much greater network than what they think through, you know, professors and past teachers. Their parents, obviously, and relatives, but also their friends and their friends' parents and so forth. And as you think about all those contacts you have, there's a lot of ways you can get your foot in the door.
And in this case, the point of the story is that Paul, my son, has been taking care of these people when they come into the restaurant for several months. They know the story of what happened to him, and they were kind of waiting for him to say, could you help, or here's my situation. And when they realized that he never was going to do it, they reached out to him last night. And boy, today he's over the moon, Bob. So could be an opportunity missed. That's my point, right?
Right, absolutely. And Paul, that's just a fantastic example. And we love candidates that have restaurant serving experience because it requires the server to interact with people, occasionally deal with an angry customer.
Right.
Wait staff that doesn't speak the language or whatever. And so there's a lot of skills that are developed through that experience. But most importantly, dealing with a customer, we recommend that servers ask, what do you do for a living?
Let me stop for a moment. We'll be right back with more. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry, and we thank you for being with us. My guest is Bob Law Bombard, who has the hot stuff, the right stuff for new college grads. If you're a grad or you are the parent of or family member, look, what we're trying to do is to give you the information that's going to make a difference in getting your kid or getting you hired. And sometimes we make some very silly mistakes simply because we don't have the confidence. And that's where what we're talking about in terms of reaching out to personal networking. Don't be afraid to say who you are. Don't do it in a braggartly way. I'm not talking about that. You don't pop off your chest. And talk about, I got to, what you do is to say, you know, I've spent the time and I've got a lot to learn, but I think I'm ready to help you. You know, if somebody says that to me and I'm a prospective employer, I'm going to be impressed, Bob.
Absolutely. And I think with a key piece of advice we have for new grads is to, again, understand your value proposition, but practice, a lot of people call it the elevator pitch, but practice, developing a very brief statement that summarizes what you bring to the table for employers, you know, get them interested, and then get them to ask you follow-on questions, and at that point, then you have them, because they're going to ask you a lot of questions about your background, and that's really a great way to establish dialogue.
And let's reemphasize, what is the most common mistake, the most practical, basic mistake that you can make that can hurt you? I know there are a number, but what, could, in your mind, is of dangerous to success?
Yeah, there's a lot of things that trip candidates up, and I think that as candidates look to find a job, they're a lot of times looking at job ads and so forth, and they'll be sending resumes out to a bunch of different opportunities, and they may get opportunities to interview with them. And a key mistake that a lot of grads make is they don't do research on the interview before they go in, and so we recommend with all of our candidates to research the industry, the company's in, the company itself, and what exciting things they have going on. And then also do some research on the position itself, and so that when you get into the interview, you are going to be knowledgeable about all those things. And so as you get questions, because employers will ask you what you know about their industry and their company, and you're going to want to be prepared for that.
Right. And the thing that I often tell new grads looking is, don't shotgun yourself. Let the employer, the prospective employer, shotgun you. And what I mean by that is, be specific. Is the job you're going for? You don't have to say it's the only thing I can do, but write your resume for the job, because you've done the research that Bob has just talked about, and go in there and say, yeah, I mean, and so on. Now, he may say, well, we don't have this, but we have something else over here, over there. Let him shotgun you to see if you fit his other needs. But some people take a shotgun approach. They're afraid to be specific about what they are sitting. Explain that a little bit more, would you?
Well, yeah, and I think one of the key things here, Paul, is to, because very few entry-level candidates coming out of college will have direct experience in the job that they're interviewing for, whether it's a claims trainee or a help desk position or whatever it is. And so you have to draw, going back to telling a story, but you have to draw things from the work experience you do have and how it applies to the job you might be applying for. And so, for example, we had a candidate that we interviewed quite some time ago, and the question that he got from the interviewer had to do with critical thinking skills. And so the example he gave was in the restaurant. They had problems during the day when they had too many customers and they couldn't serve them fast enough, and it was impacting their business. And so he analyzed the table layout in the restaurant and determined that they could add four more tables if they arranged the tables differently.
Wow.
And so by adding that additional capacity, not only did it increase revenue, but it improved their ability to reduce the lines waiting to get into the restaurant.
Wonderful example. Now, people are listening to you, and they want to reach out to you. Tell us how they can do that.
Sure. Yeah. The name of the firm is GradStaff, and our website is gradstaff.com, GradStaff.com. And as you go to the site, you'll get a lot of information on our company and the way in which we work with new grads. But there's a variety of ways to inquire with us through the website by applying with the office nearest to you, or by going to our general site at corporate.
All right, rosy outlook or gloomy outlook? We have just a few seconds left from your perspective for 2016.
Right, I think that the market, again, as I said before, is as good as it's ever been for new college grads, but you have to have a plan, a strategy. You have to know your value proposition. And one final thing I'll leave you with, Paul, is that over 75% of the new jobs created in the economy are created by employers of 500 employees or less. So it's that small, medium employer, and that's why networking is absolutely critical, because those companies don't interview on campus.
Bob LaBombard, thank you so much for being with us, and come back and see us again, would you please?
Yes, thank you so much.
You
I
bet.
Sure will.
It was a pleasure. Folks, we hope you enjoyed this. We're here every week, same time, same place. It's all about you, helping you make the right decisions about your money, about your future, about your finances. So join me next week. I'll be right here looking for you. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm Paul Berry.